Live from the KSRM studios on K Beach Road, KSRM 920 AM and 92.5 FM presents Decision 2022. Tonight, we'll feature the candidates for Senate District D. During tonight's forum on KSRM, you'll hear their opinions on the issues that matter to you. And now, here is your host for tonight's forum on KSRM, Merrill Sikorski.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for being here. We're in the home stretch. Voting is open. Next Tuesday, the voting will be closed at 8 p.m., and we'll have the results of what this last year has been bringing us as far as being able to live in a country where we elect our government, privileged by those who have sacrificed so much for our freedoms. We're talking today with the candidates that in the Central Peninsula and within our listening voice, and maybe even those of you who are listening down in Alabama, will be able to respond to our candidates for Senate District D are Andy Cizik, who's running as an independent, Tuckerman Babcock running as a Republican, and Jesse Borkman also running as a Republican. Now, because we have three candidates on the ballot, rank choice will apply in the November election, and there will be a line for write-ins. So with that, we're going to let the candidates give us a 60-second opening statement, followed by 60-second replies and a 60-second close after we finish with our questions. Let's start out with Mr. Cizik. Andy, your opening remarks, please.
Well, for starters, thank you for having this. It's important to me to be able to get my story out because I am an unknown, and I'm actually a nonpartisan. I jumped the Republican ship a long time ago because it just wasn't conservative enough for me. So with that said, I've been in Alaska since the late 70s, and that was before we had a PFD. That was when we still had an income tax, okay? So, I mean, I've seen a lot of changes, and unfortunately, I've seen a lot of changes that I don't like, and government is starting to run rampant, and we need to change that, in my opinion, and get it back on track in a conservative manner that benefits all Alaskans. I've been married to my wife of 35 years. And we have two children and two grandchildren, so we have a good time just being with them and enjoying them. We're vested in the Kenai Peninsula, and we want to keep it that way.
Thank you, Candidate Cizik. And Tuckerman Babcock, your opening remarks, please.
Thank you. This is Tuckerman Babcock. I'm running for the state Senate. I'm a Republican candidate, and I'm asking for your vote next Tuesday. My family moved to Alaska in 1966, and my father wanted to climb mountains. In fact, named me after the first mountain he ever climbed, Tuckerman Ravine on Mount Washington. And I like to say I'm glad he didn't name me after the first Mexican mountain he climbed, which was Ixtaccihuatl. That would have been a bit of a handle for anyone trying to run for office. Christy is my wife. We live over on Hakula Drive on Sport Lake. We've raised eight children together and have 15 grandchildren. I have spent 40 years involved in civic affairs, which included working for five different legislators, two governors, 3.5 years as a commissioner of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and 10 years in private business and management at Matanuska Electric. There's a set of experience and skills that I can bring to bear as a your conservative Republican state senator, and I'm asking for your vote.
Thank you, Tuckerman. And Jesse Bjorkman, your opening statement, please.
Well, thanks, Merrill. My name is Jesse Bjorkman, and I'm running for state Senate because I want to make sure that we can move Alaska forward toward a prosperous future in Alaska that we can all experience and enjoy to build a worthwhile and meaningful life for ourselves. I'm married to a beautiful wife named Jamie. She is amazing, and I have two excellent kids, Blake, who is 7, and Brenna, who is 3. I've been a history and government teacher at Nikiski Middle High School for 14 years. I've served on the borough assembly for the last 3, and I'm working hard to make sure that regular folks get a fair shake out of their local government. And bringing that experience down to Juneau is something that I'm looking forward to provide for real solutions for problems that folks care about. And what I would like to do, Merrill, is I would like to advocate for fiscal stability in our state, a PFD we can count on, improving roads, prioritizing public safety, and having high standards for our kids in school. Those are my issues, and that is what I would like to accomplish for the people of this district.
And Jesse, I can hardly wait till Blake enters the Caring for the Kenai contest. He's going to have some great ideas. That is one great little kid. Okay, let's start out with you, Jesse, with the first question, seeing you were the last with the opening remarks. What is your opinion on ranked choice voting, and if elected, would you work to repeal it? And if you would, what would you recommend replacing it with?
Well, thanks for that question, Merrill. As I have said from the beginning of this campaign, I will work to repeal ranked choice voting. Let me make that very clear. There might be some confusion out there that I will work to repeal ranked choice voting. It's true that I supported ranked choice voting 2 years ago, but that was then, and this is now. And as someone who is dedicated to getting results for this area and getting results for representing the majority will of the people who voted 59% against ranked choice voting, I am dedicated to carrying out the will of the people on ranked choice voting and working toward its repeal. And we need to replace it with a system that we are all familiar with. One person, one vote, and first past the post wins. And that's an easy system. It's an easy system to move forward with. And I look forward to doing that and working hard toward that end.
Thank you. And Tuckerman Babcock, the same question on ranked choice voting. If you would work to repeal it if elected, and what you think it should be replaced with.
Well, I think that's a good issue that you can trust, that I have opposed ranked choice from the beginning. It was a bad proposal. It was an experiment that has cost millions of dollars, required two special elections for Congress. And to this day, we have to rely on computers to count the final result. If there's a ranked choice procedure going on, there are people who don't want to vote at all because they feel confused or intimidated by it. And of course, it also doesn't allow people to select candidates of their own party that they want to belong to, and they're just at the mercy of whoever wants to put a R or a D by their name. There's always an opportunity for people to run, as Andy is doing, as a nonpartisan, and people should always have that right, and it should be easy access to the ballot. But this is an experimental system that anyone should have seen was going to be bad for the state, and you can trust me to be 100% for repeal.
And Mr. Sizek, your opinion on ranked choice voting, and if elected, what would you do about it?
Well, with that said, I am absolutely against the ranked choice voting. There is the one issue that I kind of like on that ranked choice voting, and that is that it seems to draw a lot of candidates into a race. And what we need in this state is statesmen, regular people that will come forth and be willing to serve, almost like in a military term, okay? And we need that, and we need to draw people out. Now, that can be done on any of our other elections as well. I think it intimidated people a little more because we had such a better turnout here. But I am definitely against the ranked choice voting as far as all their 2 weeks to manipulate the vote and do whatever. And I don't believe that the people voted it in. I think they shoved it down our throat. And that's another reason that we need to get rid of it, because the people's voice needs to be heard. We need impeccably transparent elections.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, the next question, we have a conservative, independent, nonpartisan running two Republicans, and yet there are people who are Democrats in this race who will be casting a vote, ranked choice. Tuckerman, where should the Democratic vote go?
Well, I think that Democrats should look at all three candidates, consider our experience and our interest in serving. I'm retired, and this is purely a run from a sense of duty and civic obligation. I don't intend to be there for long. I don't intend to run for multiple offices at the same time. If the citizens of this state want to elect one of these other gentlemen to the state Senate, I'll be very content with my grandchildren and my wife, Christy, and hope for the best. I think all of us want the best for the community, but I think I bring a unique combination of experience, and I have a long time been involved in politics. And, you know, in the elections, you have Democrats versus Republicans, but when they're over, something Jay Kurtula taught me in 1985, elections are over, you work together, regardless of party.
Hey, Andy, the same question. Where are the people who are not quite so conservative, or the Democrats? Where should they go in this race? Where should they put their vote?
Well, like anybody that's voting, you need to do your research. You need to do your homework. You need to look at what has happened in the past if they have a voting record, okay? You need to ask hard questions. Are you going to mandate vaccines? Are you going to mandate I wear a mask? Are you going to take away my freedoms? What is your agenda when you get elected into office? We have so much overregulated government right now. We have about 10 governing agencies on our Kenai River alone. Should we have 20? You know, it doesn't make sense. We're very overregulated. The people need freedom so we can do what's necessary in this state for economic prosperity. But there's so much red tape and overgoverning that we can't even do what we need to do in order to economically make this state advance. Okay, you're looking for ways to do things. Well, there is one good way. Get rid of red tape and let people do what they do.
Okay, thank you. Jesse, if elected, you're going to represent all the people, the Democrats also, as well as the Republicans. Where should the Democratic vote go in this race?
Well, Merrill, I think it's important, just like the other two candidates said in this race, that folks really assess us on an individual basis and pick the best candidate that represents their interests and their priorities. And as I've gone door to door in communities across this district, people are talking to me, especially today, about the importance of having well-plowed and maintained roads. People are talking to me about prioritizing public safety and reducing trooper response times. They want to see fiscal stability in this state with a dividend that we can rely on and that doesn't just get made up out of thin air because so many folks have made promises that they can't fulfill and are empty. As we go forward and look at those things, also folks really care about education in this community. They care about schools and they care about those schools having high standards for kids. And they want to see real results. And if folks want to see real results out of someone in Juneau, they're going to vote for Jesse Bjorkman on November 8th.
These are your candidates for Senate District D, Andy Sissick, Tuckerman Babcock, and Jesse Bjorkman. We'll be back with Decision 2022 after this break.
Welcome back to KSRM's coverage of Decision 2022 on KSRM 920 AM, 92.5 FM, and RadioKenai.com.
And here we are talking live with the candidates for Senate District D, a seat Hurley is currently held. Well, actually, it's currently District O by Senator Peter Michicki, who is not running for re-election. So there is no incumbent in this race. Our candidates are Tuckerman Babcock, Jesse Bjorkman, and Andy Sissick. One of the things that we've been talking about a lot in this race is the decision on whether to open a constitutional convention or not. So I'll put the question this way for you, Jesse. If the Constitutional Convention is not opened, or if there's a no vote, as a state senator, are there things that you would introduce as an amendment to the Constitution that you feel need to be changed?
Absolutely. Yes, we have some changes that are desperately needed to our Constitution. First, for me, is actually having an attorney general that is elected by the people of this state. And that change would make the Department of Law much more responsive to the will of the people in prosecuting crimes and prioritizing law enforcement that is directly accountable to the will of the people. Many other states do that. It would be a much better system than what we have now, where the attorney general is basically a direct report, an employee of the governor. And I think having an attorney general that is elected by the people can move our state forward. Also, I would like to change the way that we select judges in this state. We need to have judges that are selected in a balanced manner and not have one group really control the judges that are on the bench. And the lawyers right now control that group. We need to have a more balanced process and involve the legislature in that process.
Thank you, Mr. Sissick. It is not necessary to have a constitutional convention to amend the Constitution. If the Constitution fails, is there an amendment that you would put forward that needs to be changed in Alaska's Constitution?
Well, that's very possible. For starters, we have a much better chance voting in as a populace ballot measure one because we only need a majority. Unfortunately, in the legislature, you need a supermajority. And that is very difficult to do, especially with the legislators and how opposed they are to each other. So we're going to need to focus on different things as far as trying to get people united, because the government comes to divide, but we, the people, need to be united, because united we stand and divided we fall. So we, the people, as a group, can do anything we want if we all band together and agree. That's something that I would really push for, is to unite people instead of dividing them, because, like I said, united, there's nothing that can stop us in any way, shape, or form.
Thank you, Mr. Sisak and Tuckerman Babcock. If ConCon fails, is there an amendment that you would put forward to change the Constitution?
Well, the Attorney General is a good idea. That was something a legislator I worked for back in the mid-1980s proposed, and most states do have an elected Attorney General. But, you know, one of the things that you have to do is get 14 out of 20 senators. And when you say your people want to go to Juneau to get something done, and then they promise to introduce a constitutional amendment and have no idea how they're going to get 14 senators to go along with it, it's much easier to trust the people to solve these major issues by having a constitutional convention. And our framers who designed the Constitution were not afraid of the people. In fact, they are the ones who put into the Constitution that every 10 years it can come up for a vote and we can have a constitutional convention directed by, controlled by, and up to the people. And I'm a little disappointed that my opponent, Mr. Bjorkman, told the Alaska Beacon he would vote yes on the constitutional convention, but told KSRM earlier this week he was voted no on the constitutional convention. So I'd like to hear him explain why he did that.
Okay, but we're not opening those questions up, and I don't see that that was an attack, but I'm going to ask you the first question next, Tuckerman, to go forward on this. What is your stand on the executive branch employees taking loyalty oaths, and why?
Well, that's first of all, that is a fiction of the media, and there's a nice radio ad attacking me on that, but the reality is that the Attorney General of Bill Walker, the Attorney General coming in for Governor Dunleavy, and the legal counsel for the transition all recommended that the letter asking for resignations was appropriate legally. Later, a judge, Judge Sedgwick, disagreed with that and thought that the dismissal of two psychiatrists with API was illegal. And, you know, judges deserve their due deference. It doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but you do have to follow what they end up saying. And in that case, you know, we have local judges. I don't think you should be on your hands and knees bowing down to judges. I think that, you know, we have David Hague locally, who's not exactly been treated well by judges. And I think we could all have the discretion to decide when and whether we are going to defer to a judge.
So basically you support loyalty oaths?
No, there never was a loyalty oath. That's a complete misnomer.
Okay, Jesse, the same question. What's your stand on executive branch employees taking loyalty oaths?
Well, thanks for that, Merrill. You know, I am against loyalty oaths, and it's important that we understand that this issue isn't the fact that you could ask people to resign. It's the way that it was done. In requiring people to pledge allegiance to the governor's agenda was the problem. It was the words of the chief of staff at the time that were the problem, and the clear intent that was said by this judge that was beyond debate of making people swear allegiance that they were going to be on board and wanted to, quote, be a part of the team, that was the issue. Yes, it was correct that you could ask all of those people to resign, but it's your intent behind that decision and then the choice to fire people who didn't agree with your political agenda that weren't policy-making employees, that was clearly the issue. And it cost the people of Alaska $500,000. And that's not okay. And I will not require any loyalty oaths.
Okay. And Jesse, the judges have just said we're going to give you 20 seconds to respond to Tuckerman's statement.
Yeah. So thank you. The question on whether there should be a constitutional convention in the Beacon was asked if I was interested in that. Yes, it is interesting. And when that question was asked in the early summer, I was interested in considering it. After consideration and after thinking about the fiscal ramifications of what would happen, I decided to vote no on that issue.
Okay, thank you. Now we're going to go back to the same question. And Andy Sisak, we're talking about your stand on executive branch employees taking loyalty oaths.
Okay, well, I would definitely say I'm against that because to me that limits freedom and it limits your ability to do what you need to do. Now, we have to know that if you have two people together, you're going to have a disagreement. Therefore, we need to be able to converse as adults and do communicate accurately and resolve our differences. It would be similar to the binding caucus. Okay, well, I'm going to be elected and I'm going to sell all my votes because I'm going to be 100% the way you want me to vote. Well, no, I mean, that takes away our freedom and it takes away your ability to represent your constituents. And I am 100% sold out to push for everything my constituents are going to want and ask. And I would even ask that they would stay in touch with me and keep me very accountable to do what they want me to do. I'm more than willing to do that.
Okay, Andy, you're going to go first on this next question, but we are coming up to a hard news break, so your answer will probably be the last one until we come back from news, and it'll be the same question at that time. Where do you see common ground in the legislature for a long-term fiscal plan, and are there items that you see as non-negotiable?
Well, I think something that we have to look at is we need to quit dividing people. I touched on this earlier. It's extremely important that we don't divide people. I believe that everybody should like that idea. We are Alaska, okay? We are not Washington, D.C. We should not have any kind of propaganda money coming in from Washington, from Denver, from anywhere in the lower 48. We are Alaska. We need to keep focused on the things that Alaskans want and what's best for the Alaska people, not for special interest only, not for anybody else but the vast majority of Alaskans. So we need to really focus on that and stay true to that.
Okay, thank you. You're listening to Decision 2022 on KSRM, and these are the candidates for Senate District D. We're going to take a news break, then we will be back with more questions for the candidates that are running for the state Senate. On Decision 2022, everybody drive safely out there. There's a lot of snow on the ground, and we certainly appreciate the guys that are behind those plows because we have had a lot of snow.
Live from the KSRM studios on K Beach Road, KSRM 920 AM and 92.5 FM presents Decision 2022. Tonight, we'll feature the candidates for Senate District D. During tonight's forum on KSRM, you'll hear their opinions on the issues that matter to you. And now, here is your host for tonight's forum on KSRM, Merrill Sikorski.
And once again, a good afternoon, everybody. Hope you're staying out of the ditch and driving safely. We're back with the candidates for Senate District D, Tuckerman Babcock, Jesse Bjorkman, and Andy Sizek. Before the news break, Andy had given his response to the question, where do you see common ground in the legislature for a long-term fiscal plan? And are there items that you do see as non-negotiable? We'll have you pick up on that. Tuckerman Babcock, please.
Well, the best way to get a long-term fiscal plan is to vote yes on the Constitutional Convention, because it's a constitutional amendment on a spending cap, a real spending cap, that'll set the foundation for the sidebars for the legislature to spend money. Asking the legislature to sit down together and decide how they're going to permanently limit themselves on their spending and taxing. I've been involved, like as I said earlier, for 40 years in different arenas, and I've watched again in the 80s and the 90s and 2000s and even recently, the long-term fiscal plan discussion. And it depends entirely on how much money is coming in and what the pressure is to spend. But I've never seen the legislature since statehood come up with a long-term fiscal plan. I do trust the people. And if we have a constitutional convention, I think we can actually get a spending cap that works.
Okay, thank you. Jesse, the same question about common ground in the legislature for long-term fiscal plan. And are there things in such a plan that you would see as non-negotiable?
Absolutely. Non-negotiable for me is an income tax. I will not support an income tax. And going forward, it's important that I think we, for me anyway, deal with the budget in a way that we are not taxing Alaskans when we don't have to. And other things that I would like to do is have some work requirements for people that are on Medicaid and to transition those folks who are on state aid back into the workforce so that they can rejoin and be a productive member of society whenever possible. And certainly there are folks that need to be on state aid for whatever reason, but whenever possible, we need to transition those folks off of Medicaid, off of government programs, and back into the working world. Also, we can reduce redundancies and making sure that we have studies that are being done in the university level that can be consolidated and put into one place and save money that way. But certainly, bottom line, no income tax from me and making sure that government works for people.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Bjorkman, you'll go first on this next question. With the roller coaster price of oil making your job very difficult, the legislature's job very difficult, what is your proposed solution to paying a dividend and funding necessary state services all within a balanced budget?
Well, this is essentially why we need to have a balanced plan and a fiscal plan that makes sense. We cannot keep making the same promises over and over and expecting different results. And if you had a plan that you put forward and then you fail to support that plan in the future, then you have no plan at all, right? So ultimately, what we need is a three-pronged approach. We need to reduce spending by gaining the efficiencies that I talked about in my last answer, secure that spending with a spending limit that works, and then you have to look at your prioritization of how the state spends money. We need a PFD that we can count on. We should set that aside so that the people of Alaska can count on that payment and make a plan. Then we need to prioritize constitutionally mandated services, roads and infrastructure, prioritizing public safety, and having high standards for our kids in school. Beyond that, we need to make sure that Alaska is doing what we can to represent the people.
Okay, thank you. And Andy Sisick, the same question. It's regarding the permanent fund. What is your proposed solution to paying a dividend and funding necessary state services, all within a balanced budget with the roller coaster prices of oil?
Okay, well, that's a good question, and it's a fairly simple answer in my mind right off the bat. There's a lot involved with it, but the simple answer is follow the law. Okay, that's the simple answer. We have too many legislators down in Juneau now that do not follow the law. And, you know, in reality, our dividend isn't part of the government budget. I mean, it's set aside for the people in the statutes. There's a formula that worked for 40-plus years. And you know what? If it didn't work, we wouldn't be having this conversation on the PFD, would we? You know, so another thing that we need to focus on is the government overestimates. Oh, well, I think that the price of a barrel of oil is going to be $1,000 this coming year. And they put their budget on that. Do you know how many times I've heard an unrealistic number and then, oh, well, we're going to say it's 90, but it falls to 45. You can't do that. Okay, shoot for 45. If it goes to 90, praise God. Okay, do it the other way around.
Okay, and Tuckerman Babcock on the proposed solution to paying a dividend and funding necessary state services, all within a balanced budget.
Well, there are a lot of candidates, not naming anyone in particular, but a lot of candidates around this state that the first tax they want to go for is taxing the dividend. They want to tax every child, every retired person, every man, woman, and child in the state in order to fund government. And the dividend itself is created by the realized earnings of the permanent fund. And the permanent fund comes from royalty. And royalty belongs to the owners, who are the people of Alaska. The state already taxes 75% of your royalty. 25% goes into a permanent fund by order of the Constitution. And then by statute, 50%, approximately 50% of the realized earnings of the permanent fund are distributed to the owners, to Alaskans. Now, you can say government's more important than that, and we're going to have to tax them. But the system worked for 35 years with no problem, and then Governor Walker vetoed it, and we've had political football with our PFD ever since. And it's very difficult to get government to live within its means. Again, that's why I say consider a constitutional convention so we can have a real spending cap and do away with this roller coaster budget.
Thank you, Tuckerman. Up next, you are first on this next question. What are your ideas for sustaining our halibut, salmon, and crab fisheries, please?
Well, the best ideas come from science. The best ideas come from the Department of Fish and Game. The best ideas come from the Board of Fish. And that is to bring politics into it in a continual way is one of the reasons we get into problems in fisheries. And I will be looking to the commissioner, to the Board of Fish, and to science in order to work on state policy regarding all of those issues.
Thank you. And Jesse Borkman, you are a fisherman. What are your ideas for a sustaining halibut, salmon, and crab fishery?
Well, thanks for that question, Merrill. It's a very important one. First, I am going to work with and encourage the governor to appoint people to the North Pacific Marine Fisheries Management Council and other boards that are willing to do the work to eliminate bycatch. The governor appoints the majority of the people on that board, and they have to be willing to make the tough decisions to reduce those quotas of bycatch so that we can return more king salmon and more fish to our streams in general, as well as quit killing our halibut and crab from trawler bycatch. We have to do it, and we have to get the right people on those boards that will fight to really reduce the bycatch numbers. And if we are not able to, which I don't understand why, who is for bycatch? Apparently the people that have been appointed to the NIMS board. It's not okay. Alaska controls the majority of seats on the board. We need to get action out of them.
And Andy Sizek, the question is on sustaining halibut, salmon, and crab fisheries for the state of Alaska.
Okay, well, that's an important issue. And, you know, the bottom line is everything you said there is a resource of Alaska. And just like any other royalty of oil or mining or anything else, that belongs to the people of Alaska who make up Alaska. And we need to keep that in focus. And therefore, the people of Alaska need to have first choice on using that resource so they can fill their freezers, so they can utilize it, so we don't have to pay $20-some a pound for these fish and $40 to $50 a pound for crab on the store shelves. So we need to take into account Alaska first and the Alaskans that live here to utilize these resources in a way to feed their families throughout the long winters up here.
Thank you, Andy. Andy Sizek is a candidate for Senate District D, along with Tuckerman Babcock and Jesse Bjorkman. We're going to take a break and be back with our final questions in this section of Decision 22.
Welcome back to KSRM's coverage of Decision 2022 on KSRM 920 AM, 92.5 FM, and RadioKenai.com.
And these are your candidates live and in person in the studios of KSRM for Senate District D. We're starting out, and there is no incumbent in this race. Jesse Bjorkman, currently an assemblyman, is going to take this question first. And the question is, do you have any ideas to help our senior citizens with fixed incomes handle inflation and the high costs of medical care?
Well, thanks, Merrill. There are definitely things we can do to reduce the costs of medical care. And it's one of my first priorities that I have to file an individual bill will be to file a repeal of the 80th percentile rule, which drives up the cost of care. And we need to develop safeguards to protect against balanced billing and to protect consumers, to be sure. But we cannot have an automatic price floor with an escalator twice a year that drives up the cost of health care and health insurance in this state. Also, we can't cut senior benefits. We need to make sure that those senior benefits remain in place for our most needy seniors and so that they keep getting those. It's unfortunate that there have been plans in the past to cut senior benefits, and I absolutely do not support them. I want to make sure that we are protecting senior citizen property tax exemptions, protecting the things that seniors rely on to live here in this great state. We need them around. We need to respect our elders.
Thank you. And Tuckerman, the same question. Our seniors can't raise their prices or increase their income if it's fixed. Any ideas on how to help those with fixed incomes handle inflation and high medical costs where they have to do more with less?
Well, there are so many things that are being done now and that can be done. But one of the biggest is to get the economy booming and to get the federal government under control. The federal government is the source of the massive inflation. It's the inflation is eating away the savings of our seniors. And then now they're on top of that, the proposals to cut their permanent fund dividend and proposals to reduce their property tax exemptions. These are not proposals that are going to help seniors stay in Alaska. And as a senior myself with 15 grandchildren, it is important for their future that the grandparents stay here in Alaska. It's very important to me, and I will do everything I can to encourage affordable housing and affordable programs for Alaskan seniors.
Thank you. And Andy Sizek, the same question for our senior citizens with limited and fixed incomes trying to handle inflation and medical costs. Do you have ideas on what can help there?
Oh, yes, I do. And I thank you for that, because our seniors are very important, you know, especially the ones that have been here for decades and decades and supported this state and did good for this state and worked and paid into it. You know, the government should not be in charge, especially of like Social Security stuff. You know, they never put a dime into it. We need to eliminate government control. Talk about Fox, watching the hen house. Here's another little saying that I picked up here. Why are we running out of money for Social Security and Medicare and all the things that benefit the people of this country as well as the state, and not for welfare, illegals, and free college and all the other things that are supported, you know, all the immigration and stuff? You know, they're using our Social Security that they don't pay a dime into. But anyway, another good point is that we need to get a full PFD to these people because, you know what, for a senior, an extra $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 is a lot.
Thank you. Document first on this next question regarding the prices again at the fuel pump. What can or should the state do about fuel prices?
Well, we support Governor Dunleavy in his confrontation with the federal government about shutting down oil and gas development in Alaska, making it more difficult to build new rigs and get new fields developed and cut off access. I mean, we fought for 40 years for the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Coastal Plain. Finally, under President Trump, the Republicans approved that. And then as soon as President Biden got in, he canceled those leases. And the having more supply and having more refining and more support for development is going to lower the price of fuel.
Okay, thank you. Andy Sisick, the same question. What can or should the state do about fuel prices?
Well, you know, we sit on so much natural gas, oil. My first job in Alaska in the 70s and 80s was oil exploration in Alaska. I actually explored on ANWR back then. Okay, we were one of the crews that did exploration back there. Some interesting data. But you know, I got a little sidetrack here right now, but I just read another thing that said, I just got a full tank of gas for $22. Granted, it was for filling up my lawnmower. You know, I mean, that's where we're at. But yet we're sitting in this state and we have so much reserves and oil and gas and, you know, most of it's shipped out. Let's get a pipeline. Let's get it down to the people. Let's benefit the people of Alaska and not give it away to other people, especially any of them known as our enemies. We cannot support enemies. We have to take care of our own.
Thank you, Andy. You better fill up your snowblower rather than your lawnmower. And the same question for Jesse Bjorkman. We're talking about what should or could the state do about fuel prices.
Well, very good. What we need to do is we need to make sure we have a stable oil and gas tax structure here in the state of Alaska. If folks are successful at blowing up the budget and blowing up state spend, which I am absolutely opposed to, we are going to put a lot of pressure on oil and gas taxes and push them in the wrong direction. We need to keep oil and gas taxes low. We need to make sure that our producers know that they are our partners and indeed a valuable part of the lifeblood of this economy. And then after we create a stable structure for them, we need to go out and find more oil and gas. We need to work effectively with the federal government to drill on good land, to drill in good ground where we can find good prospects, as Pica has done. The Pica Project by Repsol. And many other places where we are able to explore, we need to do that and really encourage the gas line as well to bring more jobs and economy here to the Kenai.
Thank you. Jesse, you go first with this question. I'm going to cut you down to 30-second reply because we're coming up to, in order to be able to give you a full 60-second closing statements. Is the current education formula too low, too high, or Goldilocks just right?
Well, folks know maybe by now that I've been a teacher for 14 years, and what they also should know is that the base student allocation has not been meaningfully increased since 2017. Meanwhile, we have seen substantial increases to basic inflation as well as the cost of health insurance and health care, which have really reduced our ability to deliver effective education. We need to prioritize education if we want to see good results.
Thank you. Tuckerman Babcock, the funding formula for education, is it too low, too high, or is it just right?
I think the more choices and options you have in education, the more likely you're going to have innovation and improvement. I've seen that in my career in civic affairs here in Alaska. We used to be one of the worst states for homeschooling, and then through legislation and activity, we became one of the best states for homeschooling. And my children have gone to Christian school, to public school, to be homeschooled. They've run the whole gambit. It depends on the individual. And I say the parents should be the primary responsible parties and the responsible driver of a good education. We all want the best for our children.
Thank you. And Andy Sisick, 30-second reply to our education formula being too low, too high, or just right?
I believe it's on the high side. And reading the 2018-19 per pupil spending in Alaska was $18,393, the sixth highest nationwide. 63% of the revenue for education came from the state of Alaska. And Alaska had one of the highest percentage of revenues coming from federal sources. $1.28 billion, 53% was spent on instruction and $1 billion on support. General and school administration, $2.6 million. So we're over on the administrative part, and we need to combat that.
Thank you very much. And thank you to all the candidates for answering the questions directly with answers of substance, Andy. We're going to give you closing remarks for 60 seconds, and then we will be wrapping up Decision 2022.
Okay, well, thank you guys again, and it's always nice to have this opportunity. I don't want to come back because last time I was here with Bob Byrd, we got that other foot of snow, and I think it's getting dangerous here, so this will be the last one.
You're hopefully jinxed.
Anyway, I just want to remind people that I am your real choice for a conservative voice, and that's what I'm running on. I want to see the train wreck of government turn around. I want to make sure that to let people know, don't vote for somebody that's going to limit your freedoms. I want to see maximum amount of freedom for the people and the maximum amount of people in the state to benefit from that. So I also want to encourage people to vote yes on ballot measure one, because we the people, when we are united, we will win. Divided, we will lose. So I thank you for the opportunity, and vote for me on November 8th. I'm going to be listening to my constituents and do everything they want, and I will follow the law.
Thank you. You're listening to the candidates for Senate District D, formerly Senate District O, held by Peter Michicki, who is not seeking re-election. There is no incumbent in this office. Tuckerman Babcock, would you give us your final 60-second statement, please?
Yes, I'm Tuckerman Babcock, a Republican candidate for the state Senate, and my motivation in running after 40 years of civic involvement and encouraging other people to run and helping other people run and serve in office and at every level, at school board and city council, assembly and state legislature, governor, it is a giving back to my community with the skills and experience that I've developed in private industry and in regulation and in government. And just as a father and grandfather, Alaska's been good for me. It is good for my children, and I want it to be great for my grandchildren and yours. And I'm asking for your vote. I am very proud of several endorsements that I have, not least of which is Governor Mike Dunleavy, as well as his Republican challenger, Charlie Pierce. But the Governor Dunleavy is likely to be reelected, and being able to work with him and deliver for the Kenai Peninsula is front and center of my agenda. Thank you, and God bless you.
And Jesse Borkman, your closing 60-second remark, please.
Well, thank you for this opportunity, Merrill, and everyone here at KSRM. My name is Jesse Bjorkman, and I'm running for the Alaska State Senate because I want to be a person who works to represent all the people of the Kenai Peninsula in this district, and your interests come first for me. My priorities in working for you are going to be fiscal stability for our state and a PFD that you can count on, and not just one that's made on an empty promise. We need to prioritize public safety, improve our roads, especially road plowing on a day like today, and have high standards for our kids in school. When we do that, we lay an effective foundation for infrastructure and education and public safety. The people of Alaska can go out and win to build worthwhile and meaningful lives for themselves. And I'm dedicated toward working toward that goal. So I encourage you, please get out and vote on November 8th for Jesse Bjorkman. My phone number is 907-394-6796. Please call me.
Okay, thank you. You've been listening to Decision 22. We are still about a minute away from airtime. I could throw one quick, fast question, almost a yes or no answer at our three candidates, and that would be on moving the state capital. Yes or no, Tuckerman?
That would be a yes at tuckermanbabcock.com.
Should we move it to the Kenai Peninsula?
Wherever we can move it out of Juneau, that would be just fine. Not the capital so much as the legislature.
Jesse Borkman, any ideas on moving the Capitol?
Yes, I support moving the legislature to the road system so that people have access to their government.
And if we didn't move the whole Capitol, could we move legislative sessions?
Absolutely.
And Andy, moving the Capitol?
That's an absolute yes. And you know what? In the 40-some years I've been here, we voted on that how many times? Three or four times to move it? Again, has it ever been done? We need to get that. You know, whether or not we move the buildings, but legislative sessions on the road for access by the people.
This has been KSRM's final candidate forum for Senate District D, and you will be voting either tomorrow or you can actually vote the next day. This is KSRM.